My presentation will focus on the European Union's and the United States' declared policy of diversifying energy supplies by opening direct access to Caspian oil and gas resources. I have selected this topic for my presentation today because we are witnessing these very days, in the past 2 weeks, a complete collapse of the US and EU policy in this regard. I believe it is important to recognize the collapse of these policies, which occurred in the last 2 weeks. Officials both in Washington and in Brussels are reluctant to address or to acknowledge this fact publicly. Their otherwise rare pronouncements after the Krakow summit and after the Central Asian summits presided by Putin, these events have elicited few comments publicly in Washington and Brussels, and officials tend to rather talk around the problem instead of addressing it forthrightly because a number of political responsibilities are involved. I would like to review on a case-by-case basis the projects on which the declared goals of supply diversifications relied and explain how we have arrived at this point where these projects are in a state of collapse after the summit held by President Putin in Central Asia with the Kazakh and Turkmen presidents. First, the Trans-Caspian pipeline project mainly for Turkmen gas. It's a project that dates back to the late 1990s. At that point, it came almost close to fulfillment, thanks to a powerful American consortium of Bechtel General Electric to build a pipeline and Shell to develop the upstream gas deposits. In 1999-2000, the consortium practically withdrew because it was unwilling to provide financial guarantees to Turkmenistan to tide it over the expected period when Russia would have retaliated by closing the pipeline from Turkmenistan. In 2002, Gazprom won the race against the Trans-Caspian pipeline project by building the Blue Stream project to bring Russian gas across the seabed of the Black Sea to Turkey. At that time, Turkey was supposed to be the main market for Turkmen and other Central Asian gas. Gazprom won that race against the clock, thanks to the technology and financing from the Italian Eni company, an obvious case of divisions within the European Union that Russia exploited to its benefit. As it turned out, the Turkish gas market was oversubscribed. Turkey's role switched from that of a market country to that of a transit country, and we are witnessing again a competition between the Russian project to extend the Blue Stream pipeline via Turkey to the Balkans into Central Europe as Blue Stream 2, competing against the EU-backed Nabucco project, and also against the US-backed Shah Deniz Erzurum gas project, which for the time being has stopped at Erzurum. With Turkmenistan's and Kazakhstan's agreement with Putin to direct their future gas exports exclusively to Russia, the Trans-Caspian project has practically collapsed. True, the agreements reached at the Central Asian summit are not legally binding. They are statements of intent, but they are the result of a long period in which neither the United States nor the European Union were able to offer the Central Asian countries credible alternatives. And I see no change in that regard. So the stage is set for Nabucco to be starved of gas, for Baku, Shah Deniz Baku Erzurum to get stuck at Erzurum without continuing for lack of Central Asian gas, while Central Asian gas is being routed through Russia in increasing volumes. The United States emphasizes that Azerbaijan alone could supply both the Nabucco pipeline and a possible extension from Erzurum via Turkey to Europe and the Turkey-Greece-Italy proposed pipeline. Azerbaijan has indeed very large gas reserves, But it is simply not a credible argument in the eyes of Europeans that Azerbaijan could by itself supply these pipelines, at least not for any considerable length of time. With regard to the Nabucco project, one of the five countries, members of the consortium, Hungary, began even 2 years ago to negotiate it on two fronts in parallel, negotiating and in fact making no secret of its preference for Blue String 2. And barely a week ago, during his visit to Austria, President Putin and Gazprom concluded massive supply and transit agreements with Austria, which would preempt the Austrian market and transit capacity for Blue Stream 2 in favor of for Blue Stream 2 against Nabucco. Ironically, Austria was the country that initiated Nabucco 7 or 8 years ago, at that time hoping for access to Iranian gas, which for a variety of reasons has not materialized. So with respect to Trans-Caspian, to East Caspian gas and to pipelines that would bring that gas to Europe, EU and US policy has suffered defeat for the long term. There are ways out of this situation. I will make a number of recommendations at the end of my presentations about possible ways out of that situation, but it won't be a short-term way out. With respect to oil, Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan is a relatively minor element of a grand design that consisted of three elements. It was called the East-West Energy Corridor, designed by the Clinton administration in the United States during its second term of office, and which would have included the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan oil pipeline, the Trans-Caspian gas pipeline, and the Trans-Caspian system for the transport of oil from Kazakhstan directly to Europe. From this grand design consisting of three parts, we only have one, the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline. We have ended up in the Caspian region with the shorter end of the stick because the bulk of Caspian oil and gas reserves are concentrated on the eastern shore where Russia exercises a monopoly on the transit of gas and oil from those countries. The CPC pipeline, Caspian Pipeline Consortium, leading from Kazakhstan, from the Tengiz onshore field to Novorossiysk. It was and remains a strategic blunder of the first magnitude, imputable to the United States clearly. This project was designed in the mid and late 1990s, when the United States, along with many others, were prey to a number of illusions about the future of Russia and Russian policies. Russia was regarded, it was 10 years ago, as a reliable transit and supplier country. Hence, the strategic decision was made in the short-term interest of American companies, Chevron and ExxonMobil, basically, and Texaco, on the basis of short-term interest, to open access out of Kazakhstan for the output of these companies through Russia, terminating at Novorossiysk. This blunder is haunting these American companies to this day. They are being blackmailed by Russia in terms of setting extremely high transit tariffs on Russian territory, in terms of demanding management posts, 50% quota of management posts, and the right to appoint the director general in the pipeline consortium, not solving the problem of the so-called oil quality bank, which is a mechanism to compensate for losses to producers of high quality oil in Kazakhstan when that oil is mixed with a lower quality Urals blend. The mechanism to resolve this price differential is called an oil quality bank, a perennial problem unresolved on this pipeline stretch. So the net result is that the CPC pipeline leading to Novorossiysk now has a capacity of 27 million tons annually, planned to be expanded to 64 million tons annually, which is more than Baku-Ceyhan at 50 million tons annually, meaning that the great bulk of Kazakhstani oil is transported via Russia. Add to this the Atarau-Samara pipeline, currently 15 million tons annually, to be expanded to 25 million tons annually. So Russia has practically cemented its monopoly on the transit of oil from Kazakhstan. The newly opened, or rather the newly agreed upon, Burgas-Alexandropolis pipeline will make possible the expansion of the CPC pipeline to the planned volume of 64 million tons annually, because it will relieve congested traffic through the Bosporus. That means that oil tankers carrying Kazakhstani oil will not have to go through the Bosporus, but will bypass it through the Burgas-Alexandropolis pipeline. This has become the first, if built, and the agreements have been signed, it will be the first Russian state-controlled oil pipeline on the territory of the European Union. Russian companies Transneft, Gazprom, and Gazpromneft hold a 51% stake jointly in the pipeline, with Transneft as a pipeline operator. And the minority shareholders in Bulgaria and Greece are partly in partnership with Gazprom and Gazpromneft. So Kazakhstani oil heading via Russian territory through the Black Sea en route to European Union countries will again have to go through a Russian-controlled pipeline on EU territory in Bulgaria and Greece. The agreement was signed in March of this year. One of the consequences of signing the Burgas-Alexandropolis agreement is to postpone indefinitely, perhaps to kill, the Odessa-Brody project. Of course, there are many reasons why this project came at a standstill, the main reason being Russia's physically blocking the access of Kazakhstani oil to this pipeline. This situation will continue. Moreover, I'm almost certain that the Russian plan to expand greatly the BPS, Baltic Pipeline System, terminating in Primorsk, relies partly on additional inputs of oil from Kazakhstan, almost certainly coming into BPS-2 from Samara, maybe 10 to 20 million tons of Kazakhstani oil per year. So we face a situation, or rather we face the cementing of the situation, of an existing situation. It's cementing and perpetuation, which is unique in the world of energy geopolitics, of energy economics and energy geopolitics, without a parallel in the world. Russia, number one worldwide for gas and number two worldwide for oil, is absorbing the entire, or almost the entire, output of oil and gas from Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. To repeat, the number one worldwide for gas and number two for worldwide for oil is absorbing the very large output of oil and gas from these Central Asian countries, a situation unique in the world. It is partly a result of the legacy of the Soviet period in terms of existing transport routes, but it is clearly also the result of a politically motivated energy strategy by Russia to monopolize the transit out of Central Asia as part of Russia's geopolitical strategy in Europe. Russia's goal is to unite Russia's own oil and gas reserves with the Central Asian oil and gas reserves into a single pool under Russian commercial and physical control, which could be used to increase Russia's geopolitical leverage in Europe. This is the essence of Russian policy with regard to Central Asia. It is not economic, it is geopolitical. And the balance of political power in Europe is being severely affected by developments in Central Asia. In fact, due to the increasingly decisive role of energy in determining the course of international politics, I would say that the future of the balance of power in Europe lies in Central Asia. How did we come to this situation? Both the United States and the European Union have been prey to a number of ideological misconceptions for at least a decade, if not more, maybe 15 years. I will list very, very quickly these misconceptions, and I'm sure you will recognize them. And now in retrospect, we can wonder how could statesmen and businessmen allow themselves to become prey to such misconceptions. First, there are no games. No great games, no zero-sum games, there's no competition, it's win-win. Second, the free market will solve everything. Let's leave everything up to free market, including our national and transatlantic security. Third, mutual dependency. We and the Russians are in a mutual dependency situation. Fourthly, we have, in the case of the European Union, the EU-Russia energy dialogue. In the case of America, the EU-US-Russia energy partnership. What are the results of the dialogue? It was the official name of the policy. What are the results of the dialogue and of the partnership after 10 years? Another ideological misconception. We cannot really make overtures to Kazakhstan and especially not to Turkmenistan because they are not democratic enough. We can't have undemocratic gas, it seems. And I think the latest misconception in chronological order is that our problems might be to a significant extent resolved if only Russia signs, ratifies the Energy Charter Treaty and signs the Transit Protocol. In my view, this idea is just an excuse for not pursuing direct access to Caspian oil and gas. Who could responsibly rely today on Russia to become the transitor of gas and oil from third countries to the European Union, given Russia's recent track record of manipulating the transit? So I do not think that we should really pursue the goal of getting Russia to sign the Transit Protocol. There is no substitute for opening direct access to Caspian oil and gas. And how can this be done in the present situation when a decade of efforts has just shattered after the summit in Central Asia held 3 weeks ago? Not even three, 2 weeks ago. Well, here are a few modest recommendations. First, for Washington and Brussels to recognize that energy security is a Euro-Atlantic interest and cannot be left up to individual energy corporations, however powerful or however influential politically in the respective capitals. It is a Euro-Atlantic security interest requiring action by the United States and the European Union at governmental level and at the European Commission level. Second, as a logical consequence, we need a transatlantic consultation and coordination mechanism for energy security, focusing on supply diversification. We need joint decisions. Neither the United States nor the European Union would achieve this goal singly. Thirdly, it is necessary to persuade the Central Asian countries to make deals with Europe and with the United States companies by offering higher prices than Russia does. Fourthly, to demonstrate to these countries that Washington and Brussels can line up the investments, that the investments are available. If this demonstration is not made, the Central Asian countries will go with Russia because Russia offers immediate, if bad, solutions. Next point, it is necessary to open direct access to Iran for its deposits of gas. The policy of keeping Iranian gas locked in the ground for the indefinite term is simply an unsustainable policy. It is a legacy of almost 30 years of primarily US failure to solve the policy problem of Iran for almost 30 years. But becoming hostage to this failure only aggravates the energy predicament we face today and plays directly into Russia's hands. If Western companies, and including the US companies, do not develop Iranian gas deposits and do not direct the gas to Europe, someone else will, most likely Gazprom, possibly on a cartel basis in an arrangement dominated by Gazprom. And finally, last but not least, it is necessary for the European Union to launch a program of massive investment into Ukraine's gas transit system in order to avoid this system being captured by Gazprom and Russian interests. The solution of a tripartite, the proposed solution of a tripartite Gazprom, Ukraine, German consortium. Again, it's a legacy of the chancellorship of Gerhard Schröder. It would guarantee Russian dominance over Ukraine. The Ukrainian system needs a modernization and overhaul, and this must be done with European funds to be earmarked specifically for this project as a major European interest, avoiding a situation in which, like in Belarus, the Ukrainian transit system falls into Russian hands.